Very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marker's Eye on La Liga podcast. Once again, myself, Ollie Wilson, Jason and Mark are breaking down all of the big news from another very, very intriguing weekend of La Liga action. The international break is a distant memory, and we got back to Spanish football with a bang. The Madrid derby throwing up some perhaps surprises in terms of the number nine debate at Los Blancos. Surprising as well, perhaps, how Atletico Madrid wilted in their final Madrid derby at the Vicente Calderon. And even more surprising, although this headline doesn't quite tell the whole story, but Barcelona unable to score against nine-man Malaga. Los Blancos extending their lead at the top of the La Liga table. All that and more coming your way on the show. As I say, I'm Ollie Wilson, bringing you the round table discussion with two of the finest footballing minds Marca has on offer. First and foremost, Mr. Jason Pettigrove, writer and editor at Marca.com. Jason, how are you doing, mate?
Very, very well, thank you, Ollie. It's good to be back to talk all things Spanish football.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining weekend, to say the least. I know you had an eye on the Barcelona game, and the man who's joining you on the other side of the table, so to speak, Mark Mayo, fellow writer for Marca.com. You had a watchful eye over the Madrid derby on Saturday night, and we were certainly entertained. You can't say we weren't.
Yeah, it was nice and feisty, like we were kind of hoping for. Could have been a little less one-sided, perhaps, but there were plenty of fans out there that are very happy that it wasn't.
I think, and you know, the first question I'm going to ask you about that when we come on to the Madrid derby, because we were talking about it already last week on the show, about the title hopes of Atletico Madrid and what that result does to them. But we'll kick things off almost in chronological order of the big three, with Barcelona, who had the earlier kickoff at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. Barca against Malaga, and we were just expecting them to kind of get through this. Shouldn't be a too tough affair going into the Champions League in midweek. Boy, oh boy, it just became a bit of a sticky situation. A game that Barca controlled. I mean, you look at the stats, and I don't want to get bogged down in stats, gentlemen, because I'm not a huge man that kind of says that the stats tell the whole story. But when you look at 81% possession, 29 attempts on goal, 8 only on target, in terms of passing, as always, Barca controlling the game. Right about even on tackles. Corners, 14 compared to Malaga's 1. On paper, you're thinking this is going to be a 5-0 scoreline from those stats. Actually, very different, Jason.
Yeah, I tend to disagree with that, actually, Ollie. Malaga have been a bit of a thorn in the side of Luis Enrique, particularly. And, again, a team that's come to the Camp Nou determined not to lose rather than sort of going for the win. I think, you know, we've done it to death, the old park-in-the-bus scenario, but when you have a team that's going to bring a 5-4-1, not really show any signs of attacking apart from the odd sort of breakaway. I mean, yes, it's down to Barca to break them down, but we've seen before that, you know, Barcelona and any team, when they're faced against teams that put 10 men behind the ball, it's very, very difficult. And also, not only that, in Carlos Kemeny, they had a keeper that has now got a better record against Barcelona than Iker Casillas. That was his seventh clean sheet against them. So, you know, there were two or three fairly decent chances, and Kemeny was equal to all of them. So, you know, it's 2 points dropped, most definitely. And I'm not even going to bring the sort of Messi argument into it either.
What Messi argument is that, Jason? Tell us, what's the Messi argument around this game?
Well, no, I think we know full well. It's, again, back to Messi dependence and stuff. I mean, Paco Alcacer, he needs a goal. It's blindingly obvious. I think there's only been two other players in Barcelona's history that have gone their first 8 games without scoring. I think Christophe Dugarry was one. The other one, I think, was Cuellar. I mean, the guy didn't touch the ball from the 10th to the 41st minute, I think I read somewhere. And not only that, I think he only had 13 touches overall. You know, the least he's got to be doing is affecting the play. You can't just sort of stand there and expect the ball to come to you. For that, the money they've spent on him, yes, he's a full striker. You know, maybe what it says to us is, in actual fact, you know, if we look back at when Munir was there and he was a Thulf striker, he came in sort of piecemeal and didn't really get going. Maybe that's the issue. You come in as a Thulf striker, you don't play as often, you can't build up that tempo. And, you know, 8 games without a goal for 25 million or whatever it costs, it's not good enough.
Well, and there's an expectation, regardless of whether you're a full striker or not, you're playing at Barcelona as a centre forward, as a forward, you're expected to be able to find the back of the net at some point. And Alcacer, as you say, having a torrid start to his campaign. I just want to go back, though, to what you mentioned about teams parking the bus. We have done it to death. We've spoken time and time again about teams are now just going to go to the Camp Nou. They've perhaps learnt and seen what Atletico Madrid have done at the time, of sitting back and just swamping that final third and giving Barca very little space. It doesn't help. Of course, obviously Messi's not there, but also Iniesta as well, who has a habit of unlocking those doors, even with a five-man back five and four in midfield. But if you are Barcelona and you know now teams are going to come and do this, you have to be able to start breaking them down, because you said it yourself, we've done this story before with Barca. So they need to start finding somebody else that isn't a Messi or an Iniesta to be able to start unlocking those doors. They had chances as well, as you say, and Kemeny was able to stand up against everything that was thrown at him. Fair credit to the Malaga keeper. But it's just a problem going... It still looks like a problem going forward, so to speak, doesn't it?
Does it come back to the whole philosophy thing that, you know, no matter the opponent, no matter the game, Barcelona play in a certain way? Or is the flip side of that, it actually shows up sort of Luis Enrique's lack of tactical acumen, if we can put it like that? I mean, there have been sort of conversations that have sort of come out in the sort of not too distant past that, you know, sometimes he just hasn't got the nous to change a game when it needs to be changed.
Well, I was just going to say, actually, in terms of there's no plan B, is there? Because you look at the bench. Obviously, you say about whether Enrique has the tactical nous of doing it, but if you look on the bench, who's going to come on and offer a different style? Obviously, Messi can come on and offer the same style. Even when Alcacer's on the bench, he's going to come on and be a bit of a poacher. There's no, for the want of a better word, there's no like a big man on the bench who can come on, maybe be a bit more direct, a bit more physical. I don't think they really have that option in the squad.
Well, Andre Gomez is quite a physical player, perhaps hasn't shown it as he did at Valencia, and again, like Alcacer and perhaps Digne as well, it's, you know, they're all finding their feet at the moment. But I mean, yes, I'll agree with that. But I mean, I'm looking at the team sheet from Saturday now, he had Rakitic on the bench. Rakitic is one of Barcelona's best signings of the last 2 years. He has to come on and affect things. Arda Turan, fantastic player, but hasn't shown it since he's been there. So, I mean, you can look all round sort of the Barcelona team, you can pick holes in it. Sergio Busquets has been nowhere near his best this season. But, you know, again, whether you're Barcelona, Real Madrid or whoever, if you've got 10 men behind the ball, it's very, very difficult. I don't care what you say.
Just to play kind of devil's advocate here and perhaps wind up Barcelona fans to an extent, but do you think it also highlights perhaps that this Barca side is a side that sincerely in its depth lacks that same quality that previous Barca sides have had? Because, as you said, they don't have a plan B, but Barca in years gone by have never really needed a plan B a lot of the time. I'm not saying they're perfect every single week, and I'm not saying that they don't have their critics now and again in the season, but it seems more and more that we're looking at this Barca side, and when key players are out, not just Lionel Messi, of course, but when key players are out, I mean, the fact that Rakitic only came on with 13 minutes to go as well is very frustrating, I'm sure, for Barca fans. But the players that have been brought in the last season and a half or so, we've spoke about the problems at fullback that they've had, and nobody's been able to come in and strengthen that too much, aside from Umtiti, really. I mean, obviously, Turan's a recent acquisition, Alcacer and Gomez both haven't settled in yet. Turan hasn't had much time playing, really, for Barca as well, if you think about actually how many games he's played for the club. I mean, the depth players that they've got rarely get a look in, because Barca seems so reliant on their key starting 11, so to speak, and they don't have the quality to be able to step in and when there's a handful of key players missing.
Well, I think if you look at the ages of all the people that have come in, particularly this year, they're all young players, and I mean, arguably, you know, Barcelona are looking to the future with them. So whilst yes, they've, you know, got in the strength perhaps that they were lacking before, in terms of having them ready to go now, well, that just hasn't happened. I think what sort of highlights how desperate Barcelona became at the weekend is that they threw Gerard Piqué up as a sort of a centre-forward, and he had more chances than most of the team put together. So, I mean...
Not the first time we've seen Piqué as well, just hang up around the 18-yard box or anything like that. We have seen him on occasion yet used in that sort of way as the big man to stay forward.
Indeed. And, I mean, he was probably the one bright spark from the game, actually. I mean, he was excellent in defence. But if you've got to rely on your centre-back to be bagging you goals, then there's something not quite right and something has to be addressed very quickly.
Obviously, we should give a fair bit of credit to Malaga as well. I mean, I said the storyline of the game wasn't quite true in terms of the sendings off. Barca, the headline, kind of down to nine men, Malaga, but the final sending off coming in the 97th minute. But they were playing against 10 men for the final 22 minutes or so of that game that they controlled anyway, with or without 11 men on the pitch for the away side. But you credit Malaga for going and doing what other teams are now starting to be able to do, to go into the Camp Nou and picking up a point as well. It's that correct game plan now that Barca are going to see more and more coming their way.
But as you said, a team with the quality of Barcelona needs to be looking to... However difficult that is, and it may be contradicting what I've just said, but a team with the quality of Barcelona have to be able to break that down.
Arguing with yourself now, Jason, I like that. We should maybe just have you on a 10-15 minute discussion to yourself about the Barca game, checking from one side to the other. Mark, what about yourself in terms of... I know obviously you kept an eye on all things going on across Spain this weekend, but for Barca, in terms of post-match analysis, breakdown, criticism of Luis Enrique. I mean, is he a manager that perhaps just should keep an eye over his shoulder to an extent? If Real Madrid start running away with the La Liga title, I mean, there's an expectation around Barca to compete on all fronts at all times, pretty much.
There is, and that's when it comes down to the fact that Guardiola only lasted 4 years before he wanted to jump. Luis Enrique is going to come up to 4 years when his contract runs out, and we did a story a couple of weeks ago about the chance that he might jump, so... It's the pressure of being a Barcelona manager. I don't think we always understand how big it is, because it is possibly the biggest in football. So until we get a long-term sense of whether Enrique is going to be a success or otherwise, it's going to be hard to know exactly how committed he'll be to staying in the long term.
Well, that is enough time on the Barca game. Let's move away. When we come back from the quick break, we're going to be looking at, of course, the big Madrid derby. The last one at the Vicente Calderon, and it did not pan out well for Atletico. More on that when we return here on Eye on La Liga. Welcome back to the show. We're going to keep on trucking through all of the La Liga news from the last few days. And let's start part two, of course, with the Madrid derby. Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid, and Los Blancos with the 3-0 win at the Vicente Calderon. Cristiano Ronaldo with the hat-trick, playing as the number nine. Mark, you and I had a very long conversation about Morata and Benzema and who should be in the guaranteed starting spot. Does Cristiano now put himself into that debate as well as perhaps playing as the central front man for Los Blancos after the big hat-trick in the derby? I'll ask my second point after you've answered that one, mate.
Well, in terms of Ronaldo playing up front, it's almost a logical solution when you think about it. Your best player, put him in the most important position. You put him on the wing, and obviously he can influence the game with Bale and all kinds of partnerships work out, but when he's up front, we know that he's on the ball more. He's on the ball in more important positions. Yes, he can be doubled up on in terms of the defence, midfield, etc. more easily. But the result of what we saw on the weekend was the fact that he won the penalty from a central position. He got into the striker's position for the goal. And that's the game. As soon as you get those two goals on top of the opener, the deflected free kick, then that's kind of it. Also, you've got to point out the fact that Isco played in behind him and had an absolutely cracking game.
Before we get on to the rest of the Madrid side, there was a second part to that question about Ronaldo. In terms of, we discussed the contract as well and how he's going to carry on playing and being a key part of this Madrid side up until he's 36 and perhaps more contracts to come, as we mentioned last week. Just out of interest, your thoughts on, as a centre-forward, as a lone front man, because in theory works for somebody who's perhaps losing their pace a little bit more but can still read the game very well. You know, you never lose your touch and lose your shot, but for somebody where the body just starts to kind of fade away, and however, you know, athletic Ronaldo is, the body will let go at some point with age. In that sense, the centre forward role then could be one that he could just slide into and sit in the heart of the pitch and perhaps take a little bit more of a laid back role in terms of creating the play, but certainly as a finisher then could still play a big part for Madrid going into his latter years then?
Yeah, I think so. And the fact that he's actually, even if he isn't so quick, he's still very physical. So you could effectively play him as a target man. He'd still have the strength to hold people off. He's intelligent enough to read the game and, as you say, move the ball around. Technique-wise, will always be fine with him. I can't imagine that ever being a problem. So moving forward, it's kind of the opposite of what most players do. So they sort of go further down the pitch, but he would end up going further up the pitch. And obviously Real Madrid are going to have some nice athletic players running around him, and that can be a nice, easy game plan to set up as.
Talking about Real Madrid then, you can obviously highlight Luka Modric being back in the side and putting in a starting performance that you'd expect from him. You touched on Isco as well, having an excellent game feeding for Ronaldo. Isco was somebody who earlier on in the season was really getting under the hammer, so to speak, from the fans. People were frustrated with any sort of performance that he did put in. He and James Rodriguez were the two that were pretty much the villains in the heart of the pitch for Real Madrid. And everybody was clamouring to see Modric and Co. back in that starting 11 whenever one of those two got a chance. But a huge game to turn it on and try and win some of the fans over. You feel that he needed this from a personal point more than anything, really?
From a personal point, it was the case of how his season has progressed in terms of proving those people wrong. Because if you remember, the first couple of games he came in were when Real Madrid were at their worst this season. He came in, I think it was during the Eibar draw, he started then and just had a pretty average game. He's just non-existent. And yet now he's picked up slowly as the season's gone on. Had a great game at Real Betis, had a good game for Spain in the week. And it's kind of, I think he's generated some momentum. And this is what we're talking about with Alcacer and Barcelona, really, is that Zidane has played him more and more as the season's gone on and given more trust, even if the performances weren't necessarily there. And now he's finally been paid back for that. And a lot of that was to do with where he placed him on the pitch as well.
I mean, the Betis game was a walk in the park for... I'm not taking anything away from Isco at all, but there are a number of probably Real Madrid B players that could have done very well in that game, considering the way Betis came out and really put in a very limp performance in that one. But I tend to agree with you. And that kind of highlights what we were talking about in part one with Turan. You know, you give a player a consistent bit of form in the side, bit of a run in the side, and you just see their play and start to build up. They get comfortable, they get back match kind of tuned and fit and ready mentally as well as physically for playing. And Isco, you're seeing reaping the benefits of that faith. In terms of Atletico Madrid, and Jason, feel free to jump in as well at any point on the Madrid derby here, but in terms of Atletico Madrid, where did Simeone get it wrong? Because this is really going to hurt for somebody that's so passionate about the club, for the last derby game of the Vicente Calderon to go so wrong. I mean, you compare it in English football when Manchester City left Main Road and they actually beat United, of course, in the last Manchester derby at Main Road, and you saw how much that meant to the fans. And that was when Man City were, you know, a far lesser side than they are today, kind of mid-table Premier League side at that point. But it's going to be a real stain on the legacy of the Vicente Calderon that Los Blancos have won this last one for them.
Well, I think actually I'm going to jump in and say I think the first mistake that Simeone made was starting with Torres. He'd not scored in 8 prior to that game, and I've not read anything to suggest why Kevin Gamero was left on the bench. And okay, when they were swapped, yes, Gamero didn't really do anything, but by then I think the game was sort of really, it was beyond them. Real were very much on top, and I'd like to have seen Gamero on from the beginning, because I think his sort of pace and his power would have troubled Nacho and Varane at the back. Torres really was very, very quiet. I was very disappointed in him. Griezmann obviously carrying an injury, which I think affected his performance. You know, as for the rest, I mean, there were a lot of them that didn't really get into the game, and you have to credit Real Madrid for that. I mean, Yannick Carrasco has been on a great run of form for Atleti, and he really wasn't given the chance to raid as much as he'd like to. And then when you have sort of mistakes really like Savic with the penalty, even though I'm not sure it was, you know, a stonewall penalty, he made the decision for the referee easy. And yeah, I agree with what you just said, losing a game which is obviously the last real big derby, unless they meet again in the Champions League, that isn't really a nice way to sign off.
And back-to-back losses as well for Atletico Madrid. They've lost 3 in 4 now in La Liga as well, against tough opposition. You will say Sevilla, of course, who are having an excellent season, Real Madrid and Sociedad, that on their day have been putting in some stellar performances this season as well. But there were doubts about away form. Now there'll just be doubts about the form of this Atletico side, Mark, in terms of Simeone and his approach. And I think you're right, Jason, in talking about the fact that Torres started ahead of Gamero. That seemed like a very kind of left field decision. And perhaps, I don't know, Simeone never seems like the kind of guy that's going to make a change to try and be almost too clever about things, to throw a curveball in or anything like that. You know, he has his way of playing, and it's generally all guns blazing. Everybody puts in 110%, so to speak, and that's what he expects from his side. So he'll be exasperated as a manager in kind of the limp performance that we saw.
Much of that, I think, was down to Real Madrid. Torres was kind of the joker in the pack, but Real Madrid, they set up so tight and so narrow and deep, in a sense, that there was no room for a hard-working forward to really like hustle and bustle around. What they needed was another Carrasco. I thought Carrasco and Felipe Luis were their main threat down the left-hand side. Conversely, down the right-hand side, you had Juanfran, but no natural right winger. So they kind of struggled to create down the flanks, because down the middle, as I said, there was just nothing going on. Griezmann kind of flapped around a little bit. And as for their form going forward, they need their important star, often young players, such as Saul, had a pretty poor game. Koke as well, didn't get into the game at all. If they're going to have any sort of form in any home or away in the league or in Europe, those players have to step up. And Simeone's tactics weren't perfect, but he'll know that the individual aspect of the game was found very much wanting as well.
I think he needs to really probably take a broad brush approach as to exactly what's wrong. Because you mentioned, Ollie, that they've lost three out of the last four. They've also not scored in any of those games. And looking at it from the defensive point of view, they've already conceded 11 in La Liga this season. They only conceded 18 in the whole of last year. So there are obviously problems right across the pitch. And obviously Simeone's got to get to grips with that quite quickly to ensure that it doesn't turn into a real nightmare for him.
Well, is it a nightmare already? 9 points off the top now. And we said last week we were going to ask this question if they did lose, without any of us really expecting Atleti to lose. I think most people's consensus was going to be a draw. Jason, do you say that Atletico Madrid are now out of the title race?
Yes and no. I mean, let me explain. Right? You look at them 9 points behind and you'd have to discount them. But then you go back to last season when Real Madrid were about the same or maybe even 10 points behind Barcelona as late as March. And yet they came within a whisker of nicking the title. So without being too cliche, never say never in football, but you know, common sense tells you that they've got a mountain to climb.
The problem for Atletico is it's not that they're 9 points behind Real Madrid. It's that if they catch Real Madrid, then Barcelona will just take the lead, because they're 5 points behind Barcelona as well. It's not like they're the next in line. They're sixth. And that's just too far. I think that is too far back. And, you know, I don't think any of us here betted them or said they were going to win the title before the start of the season anyway. Definitely not me, at least.
I may have had a hunch that they'd have an excellent season because they'd added some firepower. There's no need to go back and look into the archives for that in any way, shape or form, though.
That's fine. I did it silently, so I didn't need to do anything.
Is this another one of Mark's predictions, which he doesn't make on air, but then 6 months later he comes on and says, oh yeah, I did say that, but I didn't really tell anybody about that one. I do love the
prediction. No, well, I think the main culprit of that prediction was when I thought Atleti were going to win the league about four games in, but obviously that's stricken from the record.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, no. We don't need to discuss these sorts of things, not at all. But I think I agree with you, Mark, in that sense of it's not just the points gap that's the problem. It's the fact that you've got Sevilla, Villarreal and Sociedad in between Atleti and top spot Real Madrid, who are now 4 points clear at the top of the table. Not where Barca fans wanted to see Los Blancos, and certainly not where Simeone and Atleti fans wanted to see them either. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a look around some of the other goings on from La Liga over the weekend. Of course, Sevilla continuing their march. They're still conceding, but they're scoring just about enough to pick up 3 points for that. We are in the final part of the show today. We're going to dive into some Champions League and have a quick look back as well at some of the other scores from around La Liga. I mentioned Sevilla. We'll kick off with them because they had an excellent 3-2 victory away against Deportivo. Surprising that Deportivo caused so many problems for them. But this is just Sampaoli's side. It's weird to see. Is it anybody else surprised? Nzonzi now semi-regularly on the score sheet in the last month or so for any side, let alone for Sevilla. And Vitolo off the bench having another superb performance after he did well in international duty, and he's had a great start to the season as well for Sevilla. This is a side that they at the moment are playing with such confidence, they never look out of a game until the game's over, so to speak, because we've seen them concede a plenty of goals, 17 now let in. It's the most in the top eight in La Liga, and still up in third position in the table and right on the coattails of Barcelona at the moment as well.
We always said it wasn't going to be boring with him in charge, didn't we? And, you know, he's just following through with exactly what he said when he took the role. He said, you know, he was going to play an exciting brand of football. There might be goals at either end, but, you know, he was going to give the supporters what they wanted. And I don't think any of them can complain. I mean, obviously they lost to Barcelona a short while ago, but, I mean, out of a lot of the teams in the league, you'd pay money to go and see them the way they're playing at the moment. They got out of jail against Depor, but, you know, these are the games you have to win when you want to stay up there. And, I mean, you know, they're up there on merit.
They certainly are. And Sampaoli is, as you say, has brought in that kind of style, attractive style of football to play. Not only that, though, I'm liking the versatility from the Sevilla side. Changing this week to a three at the back, they've then got four in midfield and then four up front. I mean, there's so many different ways the Sevilla side can eventually hurt teams. It's impressive the way Sampaoli is able to change stuff almost on the fly in games at times as well.
I think it's also impressive that he's got the players that can follow through with that. I mean, I may have used the quote in an earlier article in the league, so I apologise if I'm repeating myself. But he said, if you've got 10 religions, why just use one? In the sense of, you know, if he's got five or six different ways to play, if that's going to win him the game, then that's what he's going to do. So really, you know, the fact that all of the players are buying into that philosophy, you know, I tip my hat to them. People like Nzonzi, people like, you know, Granovita, Sarabia, you know, even Vieto's sort of flourishing as well. So he's doing something right. Over the course of the season, whether it will be enough to keep them up there, we'll see. But you certainly couldn't have any complaints at the moment.
Kind of the manager that somebody like Barcelona might like to look at if Luis Enrique does drift off elsewhere after 4 years is up, as you hinted at earlier. I mean, somebody that can come in and make tactical decisions and affect a game as a manager rather than just as somebody that buys in big name players.
That'd be a big old shake up of the camp now if they bring in Sampaoli. That'd be they may as well bring in Simeone if they're going to do that. Like.
Exactly what I was thinking in terms of the comparison between Simeone and Sampaoli. That'd be very interesting. Highly unlikely, but never say never. And maybe that's one I will try and bring up in about 2 years' time if that ends up taking place. Eibar as well, continuing their run, a victory against Celta Vigo. They're not consistent, Eibar. They're just kind of going under the radar in terms of performers of the season, in my eyes, of sticking up at around about eighth place. Very much under the radar at this point, not doing really anything special, but grinding out enough points that actually they're able to look at the La Liga table and Mendilibar kind of saying earlier in the week, we're not going to have to worry about relegation. You know, there will come a point soon where we can stop looking over our shoulders and thinking, oh, what if we slip? And that time is going to be coming around the corner pretty quickly for them.
Well, we've been here before, haven't we? I mean, eight was the position that they were in two seasons ago coming up to the Christmas break. And they ended up in the relegation places, and they were only saved, obviously, because of Elche's payment irregularities. Last season, pretty similar, relatively okay up to Christmas. Won three games in January, and then only two more till the end of the season. So if that's how it's going to be again, I mean, maybe they're happy with that. When I interviewed Alex Aranzabo, who's the Eibar president, he said they were happy to just be in La Liga.
I like that you're being shouted down by your pet in the background there, Jason. Sorry. Very amusing indeed. It's obviously got plenty to say on the subject of Eibar, your little rover in the background.
I think he's agreeing with me.
Well, do you think there is a danger, this is the follow-up of this, in terms of even saying anything like this? Because we always get, I mean, you look at, again, Ranieri last season with Leicester City was, until they'd won the title, it was, well, we're just trying to stop relegation. We've reached 40 points, now we're safe, now we can enjoy football. You know, was never willing to kind of say, oh, we'll be safe soon. It's an interesting comment. You don't see many managers kind of making that prediction like Mendilibar's made in the last few days, saying, well, we won't have to worry too much about this. It's a brave one to make, Mark.
The problem is with those sort of clubs is, because I kind of support one myself back in England, is that when you lose that mentality of being up against it and having to continually fight for something each day of the week, and everyone's against you, as soon as you lose that, then you kind of lose your own purpose. And Eibar aren't necessarily, they're not going to go and spend big money, are they? Is that the change that they're talking about? They're going to start bringing in £10 million players? Or I don't see that happening. So if they're going to really enact a change of culture, then they're going to have to find a new one very fast.
It will be interesting to see how Ibar's fortunes go after the Christmas break. But at the moment, all looking nice and rosy. Villarreal losing against Athletic Club. A little bit of a dampener for Villarreal, who only suffered their first loss of the season, a couple of games ago in La Liga. That was against Ibar, and then suffering in their not their next game, but the game after. Of course, they beat Betis last week, but losing to Bilbao on the weekend. The wheels just starting to come off Villarreal and the yellow submarine. Although submarines don't have wheels, so I don't know where I'm getting that analogy from. Let's move into the Champions League, gentlemen, and have a look. Real Madrid taking on Sporting Lisbon away from home. Sporting are a side that, not to be underestimated, I think, in the Champions League. Sevilla against Juventus, a massive game for them. And Sampaoli's side perhaps able to top the group if they can pick up a victory against Juve this week. Even if they pick up a point, it should be enough to allow them to top the group. Still haven't conceded yet as well in the Champions League. This is a start that Sevilla fans were kind of dreaming of in a Champions League campaign, isn't it?
And Juve without Higuain, that was a bit of late news that came in, so that's going to be a blow for them. I think we saw how solid Sevilla were over in Italy, so they can certainly do the same at home. And maybe the issue for Juve is that sort of domestically they're so far ahead of the competition that sort of when it comes to these big games, yes, they're going to qualify, I would say, but I'd back Sevilla on this one.
And it's huge for them in terms of if they can win the group. Going into the knockout stages, the likelihood they could perhaps, well, as it stands at the moment, they'd be looking at maybe a Leverkusen, a Porto, a Benfica, a Manchester City wouldn't be ideal, nor would Bayern Munich, but or perhaps PSG as well. There are a couple there that you certainly wouldn't want as a group winner, but there are some there as well that Sevilla will be looking at and thinking, we would have those in a heartbeat in the knockout stages. It's a huge game on Tuesday for Sampaoli's side. And as you say, without Higuain, Juventus is going to be really lacking, if you will, in the final third. What about this Real Madrid Sporting Lisbon game? Lisbon are out of it. In terms of really being able to qualify. Madrid and Dortmund are now battling out for top spot. Is it that important for Madrid in the same way it is for Sevilla to get top spot, do you think, Mark?
Well, I tell you what, if Real Madrid lose on the midweek game against Sporting, then they're going to start having to look over their shoulder, because if they lose, then they'll have to beat Borussia Dortmund at home, which isn't necessarily the easiest thing in the world. So it's not a foregone conclusion, but they know that they can take a scrappy 0-0 out of this game, and there's a potential that the first spot has gone, because you'd have to beat Borussia Dortmund at home or expect them to slip up against Legia Warsaw, which probably won't happen. I'm still of the opinion that it doesn't really matter whether you finish first or second in this year's group stage. There's too many examples of where both teams are too strong in the groups around.
Interesting as well, Dortmund, who beat Bayern Munich this weekend. The 1-0 victory in the Bundesliga, is they're starting to find some form just at the wrong time for all the other Champions League sides. Of course, moving on to the Wednesday night, Barcelona away at Celtic. They've stumbled there before. We said that Malaga, perhaps they should get past last week, and we were wrong. Don't want to put a jinx on it or anything, but Barcelona, in theory, should be able to get past this Celtic side quite comfortably.
In theory, but then Manchester City probably thought in theory they could do the same, and look what happened. And again, as you so rightly mentioned, when they went there a few seasons ago, again, 82% possession for the match, lost 2-1. So, Dembele's in cracking form for Celtic. I wouldn't, bet against him getting a goal or two. Barca have got to be at their very, very best to win that one. Celtic Park's going to be full. It's an intimidating atmosphere. you know, they're going to go for the jugular, a few spicy challenges, I think, to knock Barcelona out of their stride. And if they get the first goal as well, I mean, you know, Barcelona are a bit brittle at the moment. So, you know, I wouldn't write Celtic off. I'd still like to think Barcelona had enough about them to win it. But, you know, as we've seen, this, you know, Malaga doesn't always work for them.
It is a tough one to call because Celtic are so unpredictable in the Champions League. They could turn up and, you know, nick a 1-0, 2-0 like they have done before, or they could easily turn up and be in utter shambles. So we have no idea exactly which Celtic will turn up, and Barcelona are just going to have to hope for the best in that sense and take care of what they can themselves.
And there is desperation for Celtic as well in terms of they'll want still a Europa League spot. Gladbach in it at the moment, 2 points clear of Celtic, but Man City will expect to beat Gladbach, and Celtic, if they can get a result, can just find themselves perhaps with something to fight for going into the last game in Group C and the possibility of a Europa League spot. So it will be a Celtic side ready to go out and try and get a victory against Barca. There'll be none of this playing for a draw, I don't think, from Brendan Rodgers' side. And Atletico against PSV, two sides that met last season, of course, in the knockout stages. Two sides that last year were very similarly pegged. Atletico, though, all the eggs will be in the Champions League basket now for Simeone.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, they're playing against a PSV side that haven't been particularly great this season, which is unusual for them. I think since they played Atleti last time, I think they've won four games. And, you know, they've been poor in all the rest of them. They haven't won in the Champions League since then either. They drew with Rostov. Not doing particularly well in the Eredivisie. So it's there for Simeone's side to go and win it. It's just whether, you know, they've had the confidence knocked out of them from the weekend and whether it will be a sort of a struggling, scrappy performance or whether they can really go out there and, you know, cement their top position.
Be very interesting indeed to see how Atleti approach that after the defeat against Real Madrid. Wobetai being the side that has to take on Atleti after losing embarrassingly against Los Blancos in that Madrid derby, because they've got fight 95% of the time. There'll be even more fight in them in midweek this week. And of course, they go away to Osasuna next Sunday in La Liga. Real Madrid play host to Sporting Gijón. Sevilla take on Valencia in a very entertaining Saturday night. Barcelona have to go to Real Sociedad. Will be a very interesting encounter indeed next Sunday. Now, it's Celta Vigo and Granada play. Villarreal and Alaves play. Espanyol against Leganes. Malaga against Deportivo. It kicks off on Friday with Eibar against Real Betis. And the weekend's action wraps up on the 28th of November, the Monday, Las Palmas hosting Athletic Club Bilbao. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today. Jason, a pleasure as always to chat with you, mate.
Thank you, mate. Good to be on as always.
And Mark, I'm sure we'll be speaking very soon indeed, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers, boys. Just remember to get onto Twitter, at Marker in English. That's at Marker in English, all one word, for the breaking news via your social media. Of course, you can follow on Facebook as well, the Marker in English page. Get on to www.marker.com, follow the links to the English page, and you can get your Spanish football news breaking to you as well on the web in English from Jason, Mark, and the rest of the gang in the offices at marker.com. And of course, get on to Audio Boom and the iTunes as well, and subscribe to the podcast. We'll be back in about 7 days' time or so. Plenty to discuss, I'm sure, after a midweek of Champions League this week coming your way, and next weekend's games. More twists and turns in this La Liga title race. There is a certainty of that. And we're just getting close to December the 3rd and the first El Clasico of the season. Have a very good day, everybody. And we'll see you next week. Enjoy the football.